Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Alex, this was the final opportunity in front of any kind of sizable audience for WWE to get people excited about tuning in to SummerSlam on the Peacock streaming network tomorrow night. How did they do? Did they add to the storylines, add some layers, amp things up, or did it come across as flat or otherwise? What would you think?
Well, funny enough, I think this is like my third or fourth go-home show in a row. It's just kind of how like the calendar shakes out for us, I guess. But this was one of the better go-home shows in a while. More so from a wrestling standpoint, like in a weird way, tonight's show felt like more of an extension of SummerSlam as opposed to a go-home show, with the exception of that last segment. But I thought there was a lot of stuff on the show that contributed to SummerSlam, but not having Reigns and Lesnar in the same place during a lot of this build has been kind of weird. And there's a positive to it and a negative to it. And I can't tell if I like it because they're holding off on it or if it's kind of disappointing because, you know, the anticipation hasn't been built as much face-to-face.
Yeah. You know, I asked the question without any intent to show my hand, and in part because I don't have strong feelings either way. It was an enjoyable show. It was paced, I don't want to say methodically, I guess deliberately. Like it had, you know, what, four sort of major blocks to it and just like no filler, like nothing really extra happening. And in the end, it didn't have Roman Reigns there, but you have Paul Heyman who represents Roman Reigns, and Paul is great on the microphone. And then Lesnar made an unadvertised appearance, which is, you know, a way to deliver a little more than you promise, which is a good pattern to have, I think, as a policy. Doesn't mean you can never acknowledge or advertise ahead of time a big star is going to be there, but it's nice to have pleasant surprises. And, you know, it went full circle. You know, you got Drew McIntyre in the mix, beating Sheamus at the top of the show, earning a shot at Clash at the Castle. We don't know who it'll be against. And then Austin, or Theory, took a shot at Drew, so Drew took a shot at him later with a hell of a Claymore. Man, one thing Theory does really well is bump like crazy for the bigger, more established stars, and that was one of them. Maybe it was no choice. Maybe that wasn't a bump. That was just getting his face and chest kicked in. I'm with you. Like it's SummerSlam. It's, you know, billed as like the second biggest show of the year, biggest show of the summer, however you want to look at it. And they talk the talk, you know. I mean, Heyman talking about, you know, it's been 35 years since someone held the title for 700 days. Lesnar's going to try to stop him over my dead body. Like all the pieces were there except for Reigns' presence. And then you have Drew, you know, trying to get himself over as a babyface by saying enough with these part-time champions. You know, whoever wins, Roman or Lesnar, I want to beat them a month later or, you know, a little over a month later and you know, be a full-time champion and be that guy. And then you got Theory, you know, that just sort of pest floating around, not really a threat to win anything on the up and up, but maybe sneaky enough or opportunistic enough to still come away with the belt. So there's a lot of moving parts. I would say this, it did not come across as an effort by WWE where they felt that they had to hard sell people on this show to part with a lot of money. It felt like, here's what we got going, and if you like it, tune in. And I think they did a pretty good job with that. But like, it's different now in this era because I think when they were really trying hard to get people to part with $50, give or take, there was a little bit more of a sense of urgency. And I didn't hear that. Just was a promotion, just sort of confident that they can get across the lineup such as it is. And it is what it is. And let's just remind you of it with as many of the people as we can to be here. And it sort of worked for me without me being real excited about it, I guess.
Yeah, and you're onto it there. And the other part, too, is, you know, under a normal circumstance, call it 10 years ago, there's no way that McIntyre and Sheamus would have been tonight as opposed to tomorrow night. Like,
yeah,
any SummerSlam in the past, that's on the card. And they honestly and truly probably end up having the exact same match. Not for nothing.
Yeah,
but this is a new era. And on top of all that, I think WWE is saying to us, come on, guys, like, we all know this really isn't what we had in mind 3 months ago for SummerSlam, but this thing happened and this thing happened and this thing happened. So kind of work with us here because we're doing the best with what we have.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, and I think it's a good lineup, and it was a like good show. You know, it's so different than Dynamite. And Alex, are you watching Dynamite much these days?
No.
I didn't think that habit had changed. I am watching both, and I enjoy both thoroughly. But they're so different than each other. It's fascinating. You know, there's this deliberate, sort of confident focus to SmackDown, and then there's this frenetic, exciting, what's going to happen next, sort of breathless pace to Dynamite. And, you know, neither is right or wrong. I would probably meet somewhere in the middle myself in terms of, you know, my ideal preferred situation. But I mean, the whole first hour for people who didn't see the show was Drew McIntyre against Sheamus, fallout from that, and a 3-minute Aliyah Shotzi match. And then the beginning, a little backstage segment with Liv Morgan, Ronda Rousey, Natalya, and Sonya that set up the next match. That was the entire first hour. So one really long match, some fallout, and then a quick women's match, and then a little setup for a tag match. That's like the first 13 minutes of Dynamite. You know, I mean, it was just Dynamite finds a way to pack a 30-minute match into the first 13 minutes, along with three angles and two interviews and a picture-in-picture break, split-screen break. They call it picture-in-picture. It's like when the show was over, it's like, you know, like five things happened, but you remember them, and they, you know, each sort of feel like they got the weight that they got the weight that they deserved, given how important each of them were. So yeah, it's just, you know, not everything has to be, you know, a contrast between Dynamite and SmackDown, but the number of matches, the length of matches, and the density of segments from one to another, it just feels real different. It'd be interesting to just sort of count it up to see if my impression is what it seems watching the show. What did the pace of this week and last week's show feel different than what you would expect in a Vince McMahon era? And Alex, was there anything about this that stood out to you as, other than maybe the return of Max Dupree, because Vince McMahon didn't like him, stand out as symbolic of Triple H taking over and, you know, easing his way into putting a stamp on things?
Well, last week's show, as far as is that something McMahon would have booked? Yes, 1,000%. Last week's show did not feel any different at all. And if you take out the opening, 3 minutes with Stephanie, there you would have no idea that anything had changed. As far as tonight, and if Javier's called, maybe he can help us with this. But that has to be, like, by the minutes, the most wrestling we've had on an episode of SmackDown in dare I say, years. Because there was like 45 minutes of actual wrestling on this show, if not more.
Yeah, and most of it was two matches, two really long matches, and then a medium-length tag match and a quick women's match. But this show was dominated by two big, lengthy matches and then an unadvertised, you know, a Paul Heyman appearance and angle at the end. I mean, he had the Usos side and the Usos Street Profits. You got to count that too, I guess.
Well, and that's where, you know, the Triple H influence question comes in. Is I think he definitely had influence in the matches being longer. I also think there was some influence in, you know, the Drew Sheamus match and letting it go as long as it did and be as competitive as it was. And like I said, being, you know, basically a pay-per-view match on television, I think he has something to do with that. I think the way that the women were portrayed in their match and the story that played out in that match felt different than things we've gotten recently. And more so than anything else, they're dropping little nuggets that may or may not come to fruition, but I don't remember the last time that we have so many, like Theory is feuding with like seven different people. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And McIntyre, we all know he doesn't like Reigns. Now he's got an issue with Theory and he's staring down Lesnar. And it's like, honestly and truly, we all pretty much think Reigns is going to win, I think. I don't know if any of the callers are going to disagree with that. But I think that's pretty much how everybody feels. But WWE at least seems conscious of that. And they're like, well, wait a minute. If that doesn't happen, you know, there's something in our canon for this and this and this. And that is very different. In the past, they seem to telegraph a lot, and you really only interacted with the one or two people you were involved with, as opposed to this broader range of people that we've seen over the last, I don't know, week or two.
I think if that's going to be an ongoing policy, where it's not just like one wrestler feuding with one wrestler until they end that feud and then feud with another, I like that because it adds the one, it feels a little more realistic. You can't have everybody doing it, but it feels more realistic as long as there's a good storyline reason for it. And it's not just a result of having like a density of major events where you're trying to promote, juggle too many things at once. But I like that because if two people are feuding with each other and they only talk about each other and wrestle each other or are in tag matches against each other, whatever it is, it feels more monotonous. But when there's more moving parts and more people interact, a greater number of people interacting with each other, as long as there's a logic to it, you know, it's not just doesn't just feel arbitrary and you sort of have mixed feelings depending on who they're against. It works for me. Now, Theory is interesting in that sense because our fans, you know, you're supposed to see Lesnar Reigns as epic. You're supposed to root for Lesnar because Reigns and Heyman are the heel, but they're respected. You certainly are siding with Drew, but are you siding for Theory to beat Reigns if Reigns wins? If Reigns is a heel and Theory is a heel, like, what are those emotions? But it's clear that Theory is who he is. He doesn't change who he is based on whether it's Reigns or Lesnar or Drew or Dolph or Madcap, who he's against. He's got a very distinct personality, and the majority of people he's feuding with are heels. But are baby faces, but you have the mystery of the heel Reigns and or the intrigue, not the mystery of, you know, how will fans react to that and how are we supposed to feel if that comes to fruition, which feels more likely. And then you have the Usos who are also in the mix against Theory, and they didn't really hint at that tonight because they focused on the Street Profits, but based on earlier this week, I think something might go down between Theory and the Usos that leads to him not having even a chance to cash in so he can continue to carry it around but not break his promise of wanting to do so. So there's a lot of moving parts there. It felt – did you pick up on them even hinting at Theory and the Usos and what happened on Monday on this show and I don't even know if that means, oh, we want you to forget about it till we remind you, or that's not really a thing and it just happened to happen on Monday?
I think they're setting it up as a possibility if they want to go that way. On your question of are we supposed to root for Theory,
yeah.
I honestly believe that they want us to hate Theory more than everybody else and think he's a slime ball weasel.
Yeah.
Because of the simple fact that even though Reigns and the Usos are portrayed as heels, the thing is even if you hate them, you can't dispute the fact that they're cool and they're winners. Like, even if you don't like Tom Brady, you can't dispute the fact that the guy is really cool and he's a winner, right? And I think that's kind of where the Usos and Reigns are. Like you said, you have to respect them for what they've accomplished. With Theory, I think he's supposed to be the annoying, you know, gnat in your car who won't go away, and they want you to hate him the most. I honestly have thought this entire time that the whole Theory cash-in thing is a huge red herring just to to make us think that there's something there. But I don't, I personally don't think anything's going to come of it at this event anyway.
Yeah. And I'm still thinking it's because the Usos basically prevent it. Reigns retains, Theory wants to come out, and something goes on with Usos and Theory that kind of kicks that can down the road in terms of Theory being able to cash in, because I just think they want Theory to have that. They want him to have that as a prop on TV and the mystery to carry on. Of course, you know, all bets are off in terms of what was written into shows and in the plans when Vince McMahon was in control, because now it's Paul Levesque. And I mean, whatever hints were dropped or written into any TV show other than tonight, you know, because Vince retired, forced resignation a week ago, and that SmackDown and really largely Raw were already set. Now, Hunter made changes on Monday, I'm sure, but SmackDown was the first show written, you know, where it had a whole week to be written without Vince. And so maybe what we saw and didn't see is worth more reading into than normal, but we just don't have a pattern yet with Levesque and in the approach that he's going to take, which is fun. You know, I mean, I like not just sifting everything through the McMahon filter at this point and thinking, well, we know his tendencies and, you know, here's the likelihood based on the past. We have, you know, more mystery and uncertainty, at least for now. And, you know, Paul Levesque still, I'm sure, figuring out his own philosophy. You know, there's going to be trial and error and ideas he has, and then he'll change as he goes. So we'll see. Anyway, let's pause and introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get to callers, including, by the way, Javier coming up later. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, July 29th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch. The Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter has been published since the late 1980s. As sort of a first draft of pro wrestling history. You can access over 1,700 back issues when you become a VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip, including reading my reports on every SummerSlam, starting with the first SummerSlam through last year's, and also be a VIP member in time for our SummerSlam post-event roundtable. That's just for VIP members. That'll be posted late Saturday night after SummerSlam. Plus, you get ad-free access to all of our content on our website. There's a special VIP website just for our members with all the ads removed. And that is a nice streamlined experience. And I'll be covering SummerSlam live tomorrow night and always cover Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, too, live on that site. We got breaking news, other special features, and more. Also on Friday nights, while I cover SmackDown, so does Alex McDonald, and he is the other voice you've heard so far here on the post-show. Alex, welcome to the co-host chair.
Thanks, Wade. Great to be here, especially with the busy week you've had.
Oh, yes, including a five-hour episode of The Fix with Todd Martin yesterday. So much to talk about, so many great mailbag questions. Another reason to go VIP is to be able to hear the entire episode of The Fix and everything else that we've had up for VIP members over the last week. It has been a busy week. It's been a fun week. I've been in contact with people I haven't talked to in a while and had some interesting, some lengthy conversations and text exchanges with people, just getting the lay of the land and people's feelings on things. It's an exciting time. People are, you know, are excited. I think people, you know, people in WWE publicly are guarded, you know, in terms of, you know, throwing Vince under the bus right now or saying things that could come back to haunt them, because people are still kind of sorting out the politics and, you know, there's still a sort of almost a denial, even if intellectually they know it's not true, this emotional denial of Vince will be back. This can't be it, right? You know, and so it's all kind of shaking out, but it has been a real fascinating week. And I think we're in for a much more interesting stretch of time here between SummerSlam and WrestleMania. Just because all eyes are on Paul Levesque and ultimately the decisions that he makes. And just the booking of SummerSlam, you know, the finishes and the pace of the show and the presentation of the show will probably have his stamp on it, even if a lot of wheels were already in motion. Well, anyway, let's get to phone calls. You're all welcome to join those who have already called in. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on our switchboard so we know that you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com if that's easier for you. All right, let's get rolling, and we'll start with Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee tonight. Sean, instead of making you wait, we'll take you up front here. Mix things up. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Wade. It's always good to talk to you guys. Alex, it's been a while, man. How are you?
I'm good, Sean. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. And I will say, Wade, I think it's fair that if you don't supposedly make me wait, don't make Javier wait the whole night. Come on. Be good to Javier. He's such a – he loves this just as much as I do. Like, he wants to chime in. He's got to get his voice heard at some point. Like, I know it's the good round table, but come on. So that's my plea. That's my plea for tonight.
Sean, I took him early on Wednesday, and it did not go well. So he's got to wait.
That's true.
He's got to wait.
You did. That's true. You did. I agree. You did. And no, but I love – and Javier –
Some have called it a disaster.
Best, man. He's the best. Really?
Oh.
Wow.
I mean, yes.
Oh.
Anyway, Sean,
it
gets back on.
I thought the show, like you guys were talking about, it was a better show. I did like this SmackDown better than I have. Because, Alex, I know you've probably heard me. I haven't really enjoyed SmackDown for quite a while. But this show, I feel, was on a better path. I like the way it went tonight. I feel like the stories where they were trying to go were told a little bit better tonight. And that's what I wanted to kind of start with. And you guys brought it up vaguely. But going back to the Liv Ronda stuff, first, I will say, gosh, Ronda's promos are just awful. They are just really, really bad. And
that's
because
your mother raised
like,
you poorly, Sean.
I disagree with her on that too, but no, it was just so bad. And but not only that, but just going into the match, I kind of wanted to hear your overall thoughts on the story they were telling with that. And I'm kind of in the middle on it. I think it's okay. Because I know they're just going with the Liv underdog story, like she's not good enough to beat Ronda, and that's kind of where they're going with it. But I guess I don't like when, you know, they've always have people where they're wrestling each other, but if they're in a tag team match, how are they going to, you know, coexist together? And I think Liv just saying, I don't want to tag you, Ronda, because I want to show you that I can beat them on my own. I don't know what I think about it. What do you guys think about how they told that whole story and just the Liv underdog, like, oh, I'm not going to tag you. I want you to see that I can beat them on my own. What did you guys think about it? Because I'm still kind of in the middle on it.
Yeah. Alex, what do you think?
Well, much like Bill Watts in 1992 taking over WCW, Triple H is taking over right before a pay-per-view with a card that he didn't construct. So most of those plans are going to stay in place, but he's going to add some wrinkles, and I think that this is one he added. I actually really, really liked this. I disagree with you, Sean. I think the way that we're supposed to look at this is that Morgan isn't taken seriously by Ronda, right? Because, you know, she kind of beat her in a fluky way, and Ronda pretty much thinks and has pretty much said that in a one-on-one fair fight situation, she's going to destroy Liv pretty easily and pretty quickly, right? So Morgan is taking the opportunity to prove herself to Rousey and prove that she's tough and prove that, you know, she doesn't need this and, you know, she doesn't need Rousey necessarily in her corner to beat these two people, et cetera, et cetera. I get where you're coming from, that maybe they dragged it on for a little bit long or however you look at that. But I liked the story they told because that's not something that they typically do. It's normally the will they get along. They do a stupid bump into each other segment or something like that. You know, they didn't do that. This was different. She refused to tag her because, again, she wanted to prove that, hey, Ronda, I can hang with them and I can hang with you too. And I thought that was a cool little different wrinkle than what we're used to over the last few years.
Alex, what do you think of Michael Cole expressing that Liv was making a bad judgment call? She's got a match in 24 hours. Win the damn match instead of trying to prove something tonight by showing such heart. And how do you think fans react? Do fans want an athlete to cheer an athlete and, you know, look up to an athlete who is showing heart, but perhaps at the expense of retaining her title against somebody who she is an underdog against? or are they going to admire her in kind of the way that you framed it? Hey, this is, she's scrappy. Mm-hmm. She knows she has a lot to prove. She's not going to even take one night off to try to increase her chances in theory the next night.
Well, as far as Cole goes, I think the best thing that he said was instead of, you know, win and get out of here, it's like, why wouldn't you tag out and let your opponent tomorrow take the punishment instead of you taking it yourself? So I think they got to be careful with that, because even though Cole has a point, he's sort of painting who they want to be a big time babyface as a dummy. So you got to be careful with that. On the fan side, I mean, clearly they're hoping that people see her as, I do not want to put these two people in the same sentence for various reasons, but you know, they want people to see her as the Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't need anybody. I'm going to do this on my own and get behind her as that never say die kind of character. But I don't know if the commentary necessarily helped with that, but that's definitely what they're hoping for, Wade. That's what they want. I don't know if the fans will react that way, but I mean, she gets a decent reaction. I've said before on this show, I don't get it at all. She just doesn't resonate with me at all. I understand what they're trying to do, and I hope it works out, and I hope they turn me in her favor, because, I mean, that would be good, I guess, but I don't know. I hope it works out, and against Ronda, I think she's in a good position for it to work out.
Yeah, it's so tough, because I don't think Liv is particularly polished. I think people want to like her, and I think people do like her because she doesn't cause them not to like her. I don't think she's a top-tier polished act yet in terms of her selling, her instincts, her promos, her ring work, but she's not far off, you know, but it's just, she's in every way, I think she's just a little bit short of where you'd want somebody to be if you were kind of hitching your wagon to them as the opponent for Ronda. But I like that they're trying this in sort of a generic sense. You know, we can say, well, they should have more women on the roster, and it doesn't really make sense that she's back in title contention after she came up short earlier. But I like that Ronda's facing new talent. Like, Liv Morgan, if she's going to be a star, is going to absolutely benefit from having spent the summer of 2022 interacting with Ronda and having a big-time match with her. It is the way to elevate people is to not have the same four people fight each other all the time. It's to have situations like this. So, and it's not guaranteed everyone's going to benefit or be worth the time that you invest. And I'm not convinced Liv in 2 years is going to be a main event star for WWE. I'm not ruling it out, but I don't think she's there yet. But I think you're right, Alex. Even if you look at her as a fan and think she's not top tier in any particular way, she's still likable. And I think that's the story they were trying to tell here, even with Michael Cole pointing out, you know, it's like, you know, you accuse somebody of just being too honest for their own good. It's like, that's not really a character assassination. It's just more like, you know, maybe your strategy isn't going to get you where you want to go, but it's not a bad trait to have. And I think that is the story they're trying to tell. But then the weird factor here, and Sean, you brought that up, is Ronda is just so awkward. She's just prickly. She, you know, speed talks, she trips over her words a little bit, she gets flustered super easily. And as much as I talk about not having, I don't think that Liv's body language and facial expressions and even kind of the way she sells, not in the moment, but sort of in the long run, I think she sort of is herky-jerky in terms of taking a beating, but then being just fine and not really showing signs of the beating she just took. It's a little too whiplash for me. But Ronda's even worse. Like, you never know if Ronda's turning heel or just having a normal prickly day. I was going to say a bad day, but I think it's just a normal prickly. You don't know, you know? And it took McAfee laughing at her line when she told a fan who told her to shut up, and then she said, no, you shut up, and, you know, took a dig at her mom. Like, leave her mom out of it. Or leave the fan, whether it's a male or female fan yelling at her, leave that fan's mom out of it, Ronda. But McAfee laughed at the line, and that's where I thought, okay, you know, my hunch is this isn't – it's not meant to be Ronda turning heel, or you're not supposed to think negatively about her. That was a good zinger, we're supposed to think. Mixed feelings. I'm glad they're doing it. But, you know, Ronda's a flawed personality on air for the role that they're trying to have her play, and Liv isn't super polished yet. But that said, I mean, I'm intrigued with what they do and the story they tell, and I think fans are too. And so really, in the end, I mean – in the moment going into SummerSlam. It doesn't feel epic, but it feels, or it just is, I think, interesting. Like, it could go either way. I think they've done a good job making you think Ronda's probably going to win, but you know what? I didn't think Liv was going to win the first time, and they seem invested in her. So in sort of a meta sense, I think there is some mystery. Sean, back to
you. Well, yeah, and that's what you were talking about, and that's why I wanted to go into kind of now SummerSlam's here. Like, I wanted to know what you guys were thinking, especially, you know, I mean, definitely Alex's thoughts, because that's the thing. Like, I like that they tried to do something with Liv. I don't like the way she won the Money in the Bank and won the title. I don't like the way they did that. I think that was bad. I don't think that helped her. But her winning the title, they think, helped her. And, I mean, it's okay. Like, she's gotten better in the last year. Like, I'm with you, Alex. I haven't liked her either, but I think she has improved, and I think they think that's enough to go with it. But I don't see how she can beat Ronda at SummerSlam, because if you're investing in Ronda, you have to have Ronda win it back. You can't have Ronda technically lose twice to Liv. And so I just don't like – and that's why I don't like the title swapping. So what do you think they do at SummerSlam, you know, for sure, in your thoughts? And then is this the time where Bayley would come back, and if she does in this, come back in this match? Because I think ultimately – and I was talking with Zach on the chat today – that I think Bayley has to be a babyface when she comes back. She has to be, because the fans are going to love her. I'm going to want to cheer for her. And if Ronda, I think Ronda should turn heel after this match, because she has to be a heel. And then would Bayley be good in that scenario against Ronda coming up? What do you guys think about all that?
Now, there's a lot of times in WWE and in pro wrestling in general, we analyze the match as if it's a UFC fight. Or a baseball game. You know, it's like, oh, who's going to win? Well, here's why you'd think someone would win if it's just simply a contest. But sometimes it involves a heel turn or a returning star or a non-finish, but with some other purpose in mind that we may lament, but they do anyway. And so I will analyze Liv and Ronda through the lens of, hey, there's going to be a winner and a loser, and it's going to be a sign of a commitment to one or the other, and all that. And I think that should be part of the analysis, but absolutely, Bayley could figure into the finish, or the finish will make more sense only because of the post-match and where they pivot. I think it's, you know, more likely Alex Ronda retains but turns heel and Bayley comes back than Liv Morgan wins clean and Ronda moves on to something else and isn't in the title picture. Like, that's hard to imagine WWE official sitting down and going, yeah, that makes sense. Let's elevate Liv above Ronda and have Ronda continue as a babyface, but not in the title picture. I just don't see that as particularly a feasible path, unless simply Ronda's taking time off, in which case, of course, that could be something they do, because they can just pretend it didn't happen when she comes back in 4 months. Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, this is tough. To me, this is the hardest match to predict on this card, for the simple fact of if Liv loses, it kind of feels like a token title run that in 6 months you kind of forget all about. And it's, you know, you have certain people sitting at home going, oh, what a missed opportunity. And then other people saying, eh, she wasn't that great anyway. So I think if you have her just lose definitively to Ronda, that's bad. I don't think you can do that. I think if there's a non-finish or she beats Ronda and then, like you said, Wade, Ronda goes away for a little bit, gets drafted to Raw, shows up in January, yeah, that could work. That might actually be best-case scenario for Liv. If I get a vote now that Sean brought up Bayley, I would like Bayley to show up, somehow be included in the match, and stack them on top of each other and win a title. Can we do that?
I don't know if we can. I'm not sure. Man. I'll have to get back to you on that one. Sean, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I was – a couple of quick things. The first was, I guess we'll never get Aaliyah Lacey Evans, which not that anybody, I guess, has cared at this point, because I'm not liking the Lacey direction where they've gone with that. But at least we got a match with Lee and Shotzi, and I'm glad Shotzi got the win. I think she needed it. And just going back to the Usos, the last thing I'll bring up, and I'll let you guys go, is the Usos, Street Profits, the segment. The Usos and Street Profits did not need Jeff Jarrett being the referee in this match at all. I know the story they're trying to tell. I just think I don't like the story at all. They're both their arms were up, so Jeff Jarrett's got to come in and make it a fair fight. It's like, and count three. I just think that's really, really dumb. I don't care if Jeff Jarrett's from Nashville. I don't care. That he didn't need to be in this. It still made no sense tonight why he was in it. Him in it just felt weird. But what did you think about tonight? What do you think of the build overall of this match? And, you know, do you think this is actually the start of the Usos winning and then maybe Montez officially them splitting up and Montez going babyface and kind of starting his role? Like, where do you think they might go with that? And Wade, again, I appreciate, you know, all your audio. I'm going to listen to the mailbag tomorrow. It's been just so cool listening to everything about Vince and what you guys have all thought about that. And Alex, I always appreciate talking to you, man. Always appreciate your insight and your positivity on WWE. And I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah. Alex, I want to ask you about Shotzi first, just your thoughts. It's not often, I don't think, that a wrestler is standing in the ring without a ring entrance after the break and wins. And they did that with her. Is that something you think would have happened if Vince McMahon were still in power? Hunter Polovic has worked with Shotzi in NXT for quite a while. He might have an idea of how to use her. He might have a wider range of situations in terms of dealing with her behind the scenes and on air, just like Max Dupree, for instance, and other people like who he just knows more because he either has worked with them or talks to people in NXT a lot more than Vince did about what they're like. Is this a sign of Levesque's power and Shotzi getting a push, and how do you feel about that? So I want to cover that before we move to the bigger issue of the Usos and Street Profits.
First, I'm going to back up to the Aliyah and Lacey Evans thing. They are protecting that match more so than they protected Rock Austin and Hogan Andre. I'm missing something here.
Well, then Cole said we're going to address why Lacey didn't get medically cleared, and then did he?
No, I didn't hear anything.
I didn't either. I was thinking, was I not paying attention or something? So he says, we'll get to that. She wasn't medically cleared. So is it, and maybe he means next week when it turns out she, brought in her own doctor who claims she wasn't ready, and it's like some storyline and they're just sort of, punting on it because they want to save it for next week. Or maybe Levesque is like, I can't deal with Lacey, or I don't believe in her, or, whatever. I mean, that's the thing is we're in this transition period where when there is a shift, it can be a case of it's a storyline and it was all planned, or it's Levesque going, I want to do something different than McMahon had planned. Or, McMahon doesn't like somebody, but Levesque does. He sees he knows them better and doesn't think McMahon was right, or vice versa. So I just don't know at this point with that.
Yeah, it's going to take me a very long time to get used to calling Hunter Levesque. But anyway, As far as Shotzi goes, because that was your original question, and I do hope that it means something, but unfortunately, she won the match, and I was like, that's pretty cool, and, I'd rather see her than Lacey, so I'm all in for this. This is good. But they do that silly backstage segment, which we'll talk about at some point, I'm sure, and then she's cackling in the ring like an idiot. And then Rousey punked her out in like 15 seconds, and she didn't do like if Shotzi had like attacked everybody and caused a non-finish during the tag match or something.
Yeah,
I would agree with you that maybe they're going somewhere with her. But how I felt after that was, there's another missed opportunity to help add some depth to this division because, like, you beat Aliyah, that's cool, like, I guess, right? But then Rousey just, basically swatted you like a bug, and you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't show up again, even though the other women in the division who should be, I guess, somewhat near your level with Natalya and Sonya, right? You should be inserted in there somewhere, and she just wasn't. So, unfortunately, yeah. I don't see a lot of upward movement for her. And if there is some, it's going to take a lot of work, because as excited for her as I was when the heel turn first happened, it's going to take something to get me back and for me personally to have faith in that character again.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as the Jarrett special ref thing, it makes no sense. Didn't make any more sense tonight. I didn't dislike this segment, but it wasn't a great segment. They've got two teams who they think, if they put them in the ring and they yell at each other, it's going to make people more excited to see the match. And I think it turned the heat up with what they did. But the Jarrett thing still feels random and wedged in and not logical. And the problem is it's just not giving Jarrett anything to talk about. You know, I mean, he's admitting, you know, my job is to let you guys fight and count to three. And he's not explaining why he's any better at counting to three than anybody else. It's not like referees are getting like if the story had been our referees are getting knocked down because the Usos and Profits are brawling so fiercely and recklessly that the referees are going down left and right. We need someone who can get back up. Well, if that was the story, Jeff getting super kicked and then getting back up would have been a way to tell that story. Hey, look, Jarrett got super kicked, but he's back up. He would be able to make a three count, unlike a regular ref. That, for example, might make storyline sense. It might justify him being the referee, but, you know, I don't think Jeff has supervision or super mobility to get in position better than a referee who's experienced at doing that every week. So it's just the whole thing doesn't make sense. And as Sean said, Jeff's just not a big enough deal and has no history with the Usos and the Profits. So I don't get it. And I don't even assume that there's going to be something in the match where you look back and go, oh, okay, I see why they did it. This just might be it. It just might be Jeff's from Nashville and he's on staff and we need to add a little something extra to the match. And nobody really thought it through, or Vince didn't care enough, even though while people were bringing up questions, he didn't think anyone would care. Alex, what do you think?
That's J-E-double-F. No, I'm just kidding. I like Jarrett, so I'm all for him being involved, even though there is no logic to it at all. So personally, I'm willing to look the other way just because I'm a Jeff Jarrett fan. But with that said, no, it doesn't make any sense. And if they were going to do this, I would have rather, you know, kind of a spin on what you said. There was like another referee strike or something, and they had to go find somebody that already worked there to referee the match, and he's like the most in shape person they have because Bruce Pritchard's busy or something, right? That would have been good. But otherwise, no, you're right. He's from Nashville. He works here. We're already paying him. Let's throw him on the show. That's all it is, unfortunately, and it's super transparent. But, you know, The saving grace here is, let's be honest, unless the Reigns-Lesnar thing breaks from the normal, what has become the Lesnar monotony of all of my matches involve four moves over and over again from both guys, this is clearly going to be the best match on the show, like without a doubt. And, you know, if I don't know if the Usos will ever break up, but Jay and Montez could be big stars at a WrestleMania one day if they decided to go that direction. So for that being in here too is reason enough for me to be excited about it.
Yep. All right. Very good. Let's go to Atlanta, possibly an outside correspondent or at least a Atlanta area code. Go ahead and state your name, 404. Where are you calling from?
Hey guys, this is Rob calling from Atlanta. How you doing? Pretty good, man. Me and my fiance were at the show tonight live.
Excellent.
It sucked. It wasn't a good
really?
Show, man.
No.
It was yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. When you said it sucked, we were talking about, hey, there are a couple good lengthy matches on the show, but it I'm curious, you know, what it felt like in the building and why for you guys it sucked.
Well, so I haven't watched the episode of SmackDown in a minute. Just kind of been following along with highlights or like podcasts or whatever. And then my fiance, she's not really a wrestling fan at all, but she got me tickets.
Yeah.
And so I think I expected more for a go home show. And so
sure.
In the building, in the section that we were in, there was a lot of kids. And so it was kind of like expected cheers, like, oh, let's cheer the baby faces and like blue heels or whatever. But, it just didn't have any, the show didn't have any like steam or juice behind it. Like me and her, we were just sitting there like, okay, what, like what's happening? And then especially like the dark match, with AJ and Corbin. And I was like, man, like they could be doing so much for AJ. They didn't have Gunther on the show. So it was like no IC title, like storyline at all. And like, I think people generally in the building were kind of like tired of what they've been given over the last, you know, few months or whatever. So I think people were just like kind of tapped out about like everything that was going on. But it was a lot of people, like the arena was packed. And it seemed to be a lot of energy when the show first started, when Drew came out and Sheamus, people were really behind Drew. And then, I don't know at what point in the match people just stopped like being interested, and then the Shotzi Aaliyah match took a lot of people out of it because even my fiance was like, "Who are these? Like these two? Like who are these people?" So like, and then you know, of course, like live, it's hard to follow along without commentary. So I think overall the show was really dull, especially for like a go home show that we're all used to, you know, being fans for so long. So, but yeah, the vibe was like kind of family, and like I think the people of Atlanta had probably more interesting things to do tonight. But I think there were some hardcore fans in there. On the floor level, we were 200s. So yeah, I think my main point that I called was they just need to do more with AJ. Like it's just kind of sad to see him in the dark match with Corbin, and then at the end of the show, it was so much going on, like. Kind of like how AEW show was the other day where they kind of overbooked stuff. Like you already had all the interference come out, like Butch and like
Ridge Holland.
Ridge came out, and then Austin Theory came out, and then so that was a lot going on. And then at the end of the show, Theory came out again to try to attack Brock, and like it was just a lot going on. And then Drew came out. And I don't know if you guys saw it after the show went off, but then, like, Drew kind of, like, assisted Brock. They kind of had, like, a little stare down, a little smile, smirk to each other, like two baby faces. And then, like, Drew threw Theory back in the ring for Brock to F5 him. And so I just felt like it was, like, a lot of stuff happening tonight without any, like, outcomes of it. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I was wondering watching the show is if you're in the building and it's the go-home show – is like, I mean, there are like four kind of big things that happened, like two big matches and then the Usos Street Profits and the Heyman segment. And was that enough if the only other things are, you know, a couple backstage small things in a shorter match and then the Viking Raiders beating New Day? Does that all add up to feeling like a full experience, especially when Roman Reigns isn't there? And as you said, you know, some key ingredients are not on the show. And, you know, when you watch on TV, it's like, well, I don't expect to see everybody every week. You know, that's not a rule. But if you go and pay money to go to the show, you know, of course people want the full WWE experience. And one way or the other, like last week they had Ronda do a run-in off air, so at least people saw her in person. But, you know, like you're saying, the dark match, you'd like to see more with AJ, but at least AJ was there, but no Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. But you got an unadvertised Brock Lesnar. I can see why they would look at that lineup and say, we gave them enough, but it is different in terms of format for a go-home show to have what kind of felt like, as Alex said at the top of the show, it's sort of the beginning of SummerSlam. A SummerSlam were 4 hours. You know, New Day Viking Raiders, a Sheamus Drew McIntyre match. Like, those feel substantial enough to have been part of the pay-per-view. And so anyway, yeah, Alex, any thoughts on what our on-site correspondent Rob had to say?
I'm just thrown off. You know, I thought McIntyre and Sheamus was well worth it. I get where you're coming from, though, as far as, you know, I told a story that WWE was just in my area recently, and I didn't buy tickets because I thought the card was terrible. And normally I would go even if there was only like one person I wanted to see. But so I understand, you know, not having Reigns there or expecting more from a go home show. Maybe it was an expectation thing on your part. I totally get that. But I'm surprised that the crowd wasn't more into Sheamus McIntyre from your experience.
Yeah, the crowd really wasn't into anything tonight, if I can be perfectly honest. I think they did show a little bit of fire for McIntyre, like I said, when he first came out, hot opener, but it quickly died down. And then I think the middle of the show, like, especially when Ronda came out and she looked like she was going to heal it up a little bit, and then it looked like for a point in the match that Liv was, like, actually, like, doing some crazy stuff, like, she would tag Ronda in. So I think it had a lot of people confused, but in the building, a lot of people were cheering for Ronda, especially, like, on the commercial breaks. There was a Ronda Rousey chant and stuff like that, and they were kind of into Liv with her comeback. But then the win, like, got taken out of sales because everybody was expecting a hot tag, and she didn't tag Ronda in. So, like, everybody was like, what? Like, what's happening? And then it didn't help that, like, I think people are just tired of Natalya. And then with the New Day and Viking Raiders match, it was like, I don't know. I just, I'm not really feeling that feud particularly. I don't know if it's because the Viking Raiders have been kind of out of sight, out of mind for so long, and they're trying to repackage them. And then the New Day is kind of stale. So, and then I think the highest point of the night, which kind of brought people back, was when the Street Profits came out. Even my fiance was like, oh, they, you know, I like them. They like, they about that life, you know what I mean? But they came out, Usos came out. They're always a good draw. But even with that, it's like, we've seen it so much. Like, I think just people are just kind of tired of everything. And then when you compare SmackDown to Raw, and I was talking about Beyonce, it's like Raw has more star power. They have more pomp and circumstance. It seems like they have more. They're doing more with what they have. And it seems like SmackDown doesn't really have anybody that can really command a crowd. And like I said, AJ probably got the biggest pop of the night. Because it was actually a pretty decent match, him and Corbin at the end. But I think the most over person tonight could seem to be Pat McAfee. So what do you guys think about, like, Pat McAfee commentator, like, being one of the most popular, like, characters on the show? How did that speak to you about the state, and if you think it's overdue for a draft?
And Rob, I'll ask you before I throw it to Alex on that question. You would put the reaction to AJ Styles and McAfee noticeably ahead of Lesnar's surprise appearance, and also Drew as the first big babyface of the night to come out for the show?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has a love-hate with Lesnar. It's like, we love Lesnar as a babyface, but then we're tired of him being at the top of the cards and not really feuding with anybody else. So I think the surprise was the pop in itself, and, you know, of course, like the pyro and everything. But it wasn't, I mean, to me personally, it wasn't really anything special, especially because Reigns wasn't there. And you continue to have this storyline with Lesnar and Heyman. And I think what took people out of the excitement of seeing Brock was another appearance of Theory. So I hate to say that Theory is kind of being overbooked right now. I know what they're trying to do with him. I just don't think that it was necessary for him to come out, you know, two different times tonight with kind of the same attack, using the briefcase. Didn't really make any sense to me, so.
Yeah, so Alex, just back to you on the Pat McAfee Corbin feud. How do you think they've been doing with this?
I like it a lot. The thing with McAfee being as big of a star as he is, I think that that's more of a testament to McAfee than it is an indictment on the WWE. They should be doing a better job, you know, of building new stars, and I think that is something we're going to see in the new, you know, Paul Levesque era. I mean, I hope, anyway. But the thing is, McAfee has made himself into, and I hate to say this because it's his like tagline, but he is a brand. Like Pat McAfee is a brand. He's interesting and he's funny and he is pop culture. So when you put him in this world, you know, he's going to be popular, especially, you know, contrast him with somebody like Logan Paul. McAfee is likable. And on top of that, wrestling fans are going to like him because he feels like one of us. He feels like he really likes the product. So again, I get why he's popular and I get why people think it's a problem. But again, I think we really need to give him more credit than downing everything else. As far as them being overdue for a draft, yeah, we are on the page 1,000%. I've said that many, many times that I think we should speed it up. And honestly and truly, the whole change in power thing, I would be all for an announcement on Monday that the draft will be a week from Friday or something like that. Like, I would be all for getting it done, like, even before Clash at the Castle, because, you know, there's so many people on SmackDown that are just have been on SmackDown forever, like Corbin, that need to get moved over. And unfortunately, WWE has a bad habit of, before all the stars were on SmackDown and Raw had no star power, so they overcorrected and put all the stars on Raw. I hope this time they're more disciplined and they even it out, because unfortunately they do have a tendency to overcorrect and then create the opposite problem on the other show.
And really, it would sound sort of crazy to say that before last week, but or before this week even, but I mean, Paul Levesque can decide. I want to do drafts every 3 months. Who knows? You know, I mean, it's just everything is up for grabs. You know, he's going to say, you know, he wants to honor the culture of booking and the history that Vince McMahon has had. But, you know, it's his win-loss record as head coach. You know, he's not going to run plays he doesn't believe in out of, you know, deference and respect to Vince McMahon's wrestling mind. You know, I mean, that might cross his mind. He might think of the awkwardness or complication of his wife being Vince McMahon's daughter and other pressures. But ultimately, he's going to get blamed for wins and losses. He's got to run the place he wants and play the players he wants. And, you know, we're just not to that stage yet where it's obvious what that is. But if one of those plays is I want to do a draft and really just make my mark and get fresh matchups that I'm excited about and pull some people from NXT and try to hire a couple people who Vince wasn't high on, who are out there and available but not under contract. I mean, his time to make moves, if he wants to make some big moves, could be in August, Alex, and it could show up in various ways. Rob, was there anything before SmackDown that you saw in person?
No, the only thing that we saw, we were in the concession stand, but they had an opening dark match of it was Shayna Baszler and Raquel Rodriguez, and I don't know how that turned out because we were in line getting beer, people seemed to be reacting to it pretty well. I can't remember who went over in that match because, like I said, we were in line. So, but yeah, other than that, I think my last thing I wanted to really bring up was like, where you see the IC title going? Like, who's next in line for Gunther? Because we talk about star power and we talk about moving people over. I'm a really big fan of AJ, so I would love to see AJ in that spot if they bring him over to SmackDown. But who is up next for Gunther? And
it's not.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys don't have any other questions, I'll leave you with that, I guess.
Alex, do you have anything else you want to ask Rob before he goes about his on-site experience at the building?
Oh, no, I'm good.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thanks, Rob. Appreciate it. We will take that.
All right, thanks.
The Gunther question. Yeah, thanks for calling in. By the way, if you want to be an on-site correspondent, you can always let us know ahead of time, and we'll look for your number on the switchboard. Email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, and we'll lock you in as our on-site correspondent, and just include the name of the city and the date of the show in the subject line. That just helps me stay a little bit more organized in communicating with you before the show. Gunther, I mean, when you go, well, who's next for Gunther? It's like, how can we possibly know? You know, like, SummerSlam is Saturday, and Monday, Paul Levesque Hunter could hit the reset button on everything. Sami Zayn as a babyface might be Gunther's next challenger. Butch as be his next challenger. Like, who knows? It could be if I don't know. I'm trying to be like, you know, random names here for people that Hunter could bring in who have been out and about and he brings back and then just decides to hotshot something. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to like punt on the question. It's just, it's not realistic or probably worth a lot of time to speculate too far out because there's somebody new in charge and a major event is tomorrow. So Monday and Friday next week, we'll start to get hints at it. That doesn't mean there isn't someone we would like to see him feud with. Alex, your thoughts on that. Are you more willing to read tea leaves or make a prediction? And either way, is there somebody you in particular would like to see him matched up against? I know Rob brought up AJ Styles.
If we're in your weird parallel universe of all these people coming in, Johnny Gargano and Bray Wyatt are my choices. If I'm stuck with just people that are currently on SmackDown and this isn't what I want. This is probably the closest to the real answer to the question, but Nakamura and Madcap Moss would be his next two logical challengers.
Yeah.
With the possibility of Ludwig Kaiser after those two. And if we have a draft and can shake things up a little bit, I do like the AJ idea, but I'd rather he be kind of a challenger for Reigns at some point. I'm a little disappointed we still haven't gotten that. Another name to throw in there again, if we're going to shake things up, is Matt Riddle. And then yet another name to throw in if we're going to shake things up, and I think it'd be very interesting, is Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, yeah. I do think, I mean, you named some, from AJ through Lashley, there's some interesting names for him to face on this roster. And, you know, Levesque's going to be sitting down and looking at this whole roster and just going, I know Vince wasn't high in this guy, or this one crossed his mind as a good match. I think it would be, or maybe he's thinking, let's save that till next summer. I don't want to wait. I want to get to this now. I heard Alex suggest it. Let's do it. Let's do a draft and let's line up some matches that I want to do. Good idea. And we're going to be off to the races with fresh matchups and positioning people how I want. And, you know, I think people are excited for that possibility. You know, I still don't have a sense of how big, the pace at which there will be significant changes, other than you're not going to get like, I mean, I don't expect Triple H and Stephanie to walk out next Monday and suddenly become centerpiece authority figures again, and have the show revolve around them as heels or faces or anything like that. But given how Hunter put himself kind of front and center early on in that takeover era for NXT, and he was on the show and they're showing him interacting with wrestlers and he would introduce takeover. Part of me is just sort of like surprised I haven't assumed he would do that again, but I just think he's kind of in a different place right now. And I think he knows what the reaction on the internet would be to that. And I think he's going to stay off TV and not put himself out there as this is a new era. And it's the, you know, Triple H, WWE head of creative era, like, you know, whatever, you would be phrased differently. Alex, are you kind of surprised that we haven't seen or heard more mentions of Triple H? Is Hunter going to be like take pride in not having people drop his name, because on AEW TV, people drop, you know, announcers drop Tony Khan's name, and Hunter kind of wants almost to counter program that and be that executive who just isn't on TV because he was famous enough and now it's time to be famous for different reasons and not put himself on TV?
Yeah, I think there is next to no chance he's a television character anytime soon. You know, For better or worse, or however you want to look at it, Triple H has a great respect for the business. And even though it wasn't made into like this huge deal, I do think that his moment with the boots at WrestleMania was important to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he wants to tarnish that by being a character. I don't think he'll be introducing anything. I don't think he'll be a heel or face or any type of authority figure, at least for a long time, if ever. I just do not see that happening. And to your point, I just don't think that he views this role in the same way he did the NXT role. The NXT role was more of a mentorship thing, and that was great, and that was a good chapter of his life. But that's not what this is, and I think he knows that.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Let's keep rolling through calls. If you're listening and want to get in line, you can do so by calling 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad to flag yourself on the switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com is the email if you want to contribute your thoughts or questions to the show using that method. All right, up next we'll go to Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, thank you for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, I thought, like you guys said earlier, it was one of the best SmackDowns in a long, long time, had a lot of good wrestling on this show compared to what it usually has. I mean, the average SmackDown just has so much filler that you just don't care about. Like, just a lot of nonsense, you know, was on SmackDown. And tonight, like, everything, like, pretty much felt important, you know. But, I mean, Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus, like, for some reason, I'm not really into that match. I don't know what it is. Like, I'm a big Drew fan, you know, and I'm a Sheamus fan. Like, they're both great in the ring. But, you know, I guess for me, like, ever since Drew, you know, he got the sword and everything, he comes off as real cartoonish. You know, like, I haven't been into him as much. You know, and I used to feel like that about Drew, you know, back, you know, a long time ago. And then Drew grew on me during the pandemic era. And now it's starting to fade again. It's weird. And and Sheamus is, like, fading on me, too. I mean, I think Sheamus needs to be, like, freshened up or something. But yeah, what are you guys' thoughts on that with Drew and Sheamus? I mean, it really just doesn't do it for me, that match. I don't know why, though.
Alex?
I can tell you probably why. Unfortunately, as good as their matches are, there is nothing they can do to each other at this point that they haven't done already 3 times. That's part of it.
Drew did throw Sheamus into a bar that had Photoshopped photos of Sheamus's face made to look like his ancestors, and I don't think they have done that before. But that is what they're down to. You know, I mean, they have to go to that extent now to make
the
original impression.
Fair enough. I'll give you that. Besides that, the other problem is that as much as I've called for it and Wade has called for it, I think we're like the biggest Sheamus fans on PW Torch. But as much as we've said, hey, we really want to see Sheamus and Reigns, there was 0% chance that Sheamus was going to win tonight. And everybody knew
exactly
that. Everybody. And unfortunately, I really think that that's probably why you and a lot of other people couldn't get into it as much as you wanted to.
Speaking of Sheamus, in the comments section on your TV report, Alex at pwtorch.com, Leander Beattie said, I would love to see Sheamus go after Gunther in that Intercontinental title. He deserves it after a string of great matches against Drew McIntyre. So he has some other things to say too, but interesting that, you know, there's someone rooting for a match that we were to be an opponent of Gunther, and that would be fun to watch. Sheamus loves people who bring it, and he wants you to bring it against him in terms of stiff moves. And I would tune in for that. I mean, Drew and Sheamus to me always deliver, but yeah, it's sort of Randy Cena. It's a good match, but you've seen it before. But Sheamus Gunther would be a blast. I wouldn't want to be, you know, I wouldn't want to be either of them, but then I'm not either of them, and they both want to take that, you know, have that kind of match. So I think that could be a lot of fun. But Mike, back to you.
Yeah, before I move on to the next topic, like you were talking about, Triple H now, like, in charge and everything. Does he have the final say, like Vince now, or is it Stephanie or Nick Khan that has the final say in, like, what the storyline's going to be and the winner of the match and outcome and all that?
Paul Levesque?
Or is it like...
Yeah. No, I mean, Nick Khan's not a wrestling guy. He doesn't have power over him, and Stephanie is not... She's going to defer to her husband on this. She's not as immersed in the storyline. So, yeah, I mean, we're at a point where it's Levesque's call. I mean, I until I hear otherwise, that's all I'm hearing. He is in charge.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of change.
I'll tell you this though, Mike. If Levesque says I want to fire Paul Heyman and job out Roman Reigns, you know, I mean, I think Nick Khan and Steph are going to say, wait a second, we got to intervene here. You know, like within reason, can Paul Levesque be fired? Yes, he is not the CEO. But beyond seeming to do something just outlandish and head scratching and bonkers, yeah, he's the head coach and the GM hired him. And, you know, this isn't going to be, and Vince as majority shareholder, you know, I mean, is Paul Levesque going to call up Vince and say, you know, what do you have in mind for Mania? I think I know what you had in mind. What do you think if I do this? I don't know. Maybe he'll be a sounding board informally for him. He has his father-in-law. He's allowed to talk to him about the grandkids, and then he might bring up WrestleMania. I can't rule that out. But Vince isn't going to text Hunter and go, you know, I saw what you did on TV, and I won't let you go that direction. I mean, it's Levesque's game. It's his. He plays who he wants to play, and he calls the plays he wants to call. And there really is nobody who. With power, who I think is going to want the responsibility of getting in the way of his vision right now.
But do you think, like, maybe, like, Vince, you know, he had some of the SummerSlam matches planned, and then Paul, he'll change some of the winners and losers?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, we are in a transition phase where Vince might have told a story that makes sense to do a certain finish at SummerSlam, and Levesque's not going to say, well, I'm going to do something the opposite of that, even though the whole story leading up to it doesn't tell that story. I mean, we're just in a transition phase. That's why, you know, Monday is sort of a bit of a cleanse. You know, it's a bit of a hard reset without, like, you know, I don't think they're going to have a hard reset like, you know, Bischoff and Russo did, you know, or hold up all the titles and introduce and go meta on everybody. It's not going to be that, but I mean, it's Levesque's call. What happened to the Liv Morgan Ronda match? If Vince had one idea and Levesque wants to do another, it's going to be what Levesque wants. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, I like you said, Alex, I think this Liv Rousey match is the most intriguing of the whole card when it comes to what's going to happen and who's going to win. Because, like you said, Liv really can't lose. It just, you know. That would suck. And then Rousey, she's got to be protected to a certain point. So I'm really intrigued what they do here. You know, I could see, like I mentioned a few weeks ago, maybe Liv, you know, rolls up Rousey. She retains that way. Rousey snaps after the match, goes ballistic on Liv Morgan, beats the crap out of her, and then Bayley comes down to make the save. I can see, like, a scenario like that. But in that case, I don't know who Bayley would feud with. You know, maybe somehow they would do Bayley versus Liv. I think Liv versus, you know, Bayley would be really good. But then I don't know what Rousey would do from there. Maybe, you know, Rousey takes time off, like you guys said. So what do you think about that?
Alex, any thoughts?
You mean she takes time off with the title, or she loses and then freaks out and Morgan is still champion?
Right. She loses and then takes time off. He freaks out, yeah, and takes time off.
Got it. Okay. I'm more in favor of that. I mean, again, anything that gets Bayley involved will have my vote, but I don't know. I think that is such a tough match to book, and I just...
Right.
I'm kind of with Wade in that I'm not a big fan of the triple threat thing, but I feel like in this situation... Throwing Natalya in there so that you had somebody to lose and you could keep the title on Morgan, you could do a heel turn with Rousey, have her take time off. You know, I feel like this is one of those times where, unfortunately, that might have been better. I get why they didn't do it, and I'm okay with the one-on-one. I just don't know how you get yourself out of it with everybody looking good. And I know that that's not always how it should be. There should be people that win and lose, but the whole aura of Rousey is really wearing off. And a second straight loss to Liv Morgan, who is just, I mean, this would be a different conversation if she lost twice to Bianca Belair, right? But this isn't. This is Liv Morgan, who, what, 9 months ago was doing nothing? It's just, it's a very tough situation.
Yeah. And let's throw out there another X factor, which is Sasha and Naomi might be back on the table.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if Vince didn't like Max Dupree and they had exchanged some words and Vince like, let's write him out, I don't like this guy. And then Levesque comes in and goes, well, you're good for this gimmick. And I think Vince blew that out of proportion. Let's make this work. If that's how that played out, and it seems something along those lines probably did. And I mean, it was not unforeseeable. And something that I addressed as a possibility. I've been talking about Sasha and Naomi too, you know, since my Keller report last Saturday. They are two people whose problem was primarily with Vince McMahon. And from a public standpoint, they wouldn't be seen by the people who took their side and stood up for them as caving in by going back to WWE, because they're going back to WWE led by Paul Levesque and Stephanie McMahon, who they did not have an issue with. It wasn't their booking call or what they perceived as disrespect or promising one thing and delivering another. It's a new regime. So with all that said, I mean, what happens Saturday at SummerSlam could be, or Monday on Raw and Friday on SmackDown with the women's division and Rousey and Liv Morgan in particular, could be completely changed, not just because of Bayley coming back, which maybe was planned if it happens when Vince was around and it happens just as Vince planned. But Hunter might be thinking, I might get Sasha back. And if so, we got to do something big with her right away. So if Liv is going to win, now maybe Ronda wins and turns heel and Sasha comes in as a babyface. Like, all kinds of moving parts. And that, you know, it's fun to speculate about, but the moving parts make it impossible for many people to know what's going to happen, including probably Levesque at this point, because if Sasha and Naomi are going to come back, that probably isn't far along yet in terms of being worked out.
Yeah, and I would think that Hunter would want Sasha back for SummerSlam, if possible. I mean, how great would
it be, you
know, if Sasha...
It'd be a big moment for him, but unless it really makes storyline sense, I think he'd rather factor that into one of his TV shows. Because if you put him on a TV show, that's going to spark a ton of interest in viewership. And, oh, Levesque, look, ratings are up in August compared to July. If you put him on Peacock and it doesn't affect viewership and that number isn't as public. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying he would do something just for the PR, but I'm sure that'd be part of it, but not the only reason. But no, I don't think he'd wedge her into SummerSlam just for the pop because I think having her come out in mid-August has almost as much impact. And if you can build up to it and lay the groundwork for it more and have a better lay of the land for her that's right for her to come back and have an impact, I guess I'd wait, you know. And so I'm sure he's processing all that if it is a viable option for Sasha, especially to agree to return.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier today, you know, if they bring them back, like maybe have Sasha and Naomi as a unit, but not necessarily as a tag team. You know, you could have them maybe as heels, you know, and if you bring them to SmackDown, you could have Sasha. You could do that Sasha Rousey match that you wanted. And then, you know, Sasha, if Rousey's the champion at the time, win the title from Rousey. Or you could have them go to Raw and you could start that Sasha Belair feud up. And we could get the Belair Sasha match that we were supposed to get last year at SummerSlam, and we could get it this year now. So, they could fit on either show, and it would be really interesting. I just don't know if you bring in heels or baby faces and how you tell that story.
Alex, any thoughts on the Sasha Naomi aspect of things?
I think Sasha is going to be Seth Rollins' mystery opponent tomorrow at SummerSlam. they're going to tell her she has to lose, and then she's going to cry and walk out again.
No, let's be nice.
Sorry,
now.
Guys.
I know you're a big Sasha fan like me.
Go ahead, Alex. I was, but I just... I'm not allowed to do that at my job and then be revered on the internet for it. That's it just is what it is. And I feel like her fan base, which I was a part of to an extent, you know, but I feel like she is a person that gets so many passes for acting extremely inappropriately in situations. And as far as Naomi goes, I really kind of hope that Naomi knows that she screwed up and she probably needs to find a better friend. But anyway, besides all of that, as far as bringing them back, it brings star power to the division for sure. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. We talked about Shotzi a little bit earlier and, you know, my feelings on that. And let's be honest, Aaliyah is dead in the water. And if tonight is any indication, new management has zero interest in Lacey Evans, which, again, probably a good call. But, you know, we need some depth, especially if we're going to have another draft, because you can only move Becky and Asuka around so many times, right? So we would kind of just be back where we were like a year ago, moving a couple people around. So it would definitely help. That's for sure. I don't know if SummerSlam is the place to do it. I'm kind of with Wade that for the two of them, I would like to see some sort of buildup where we don't necessarily know who it is, but it's strongly hinted it's the two of them. And
true.
Honestly and truly, kind of hope that when they're brought back, they are brought back as separate entities. Considering the fact that the positive that might come from this whole situation is the death of those titles that didn't mean anything, that were shoehorned booked for 4 years or whatever it was.
All right, Mike, any quick closing words from you? I do want to have time for the other callers here.
Real quick. Do you think it's best to bring in Sasha as a heel or a babyface? And Naomi, too. But we'll get to the best bit.
I think because of the aforementioned, you know, wave of internet sympathy for, you know, Sasha's battles with Vince McMahon, you'd bring her in as a babyface. I think fans are going to cheer her. I think she's better at playing a heel than a babyface, I think fans just want to cheer her. And I think you just kind of got to listen to the fans there. And you know, maybe with Triple H, she'll be more comfortable and clean up some aspects of her babyface act that I think have not worked for me or seemed ideal to me, I guess, a better way to put it. But, you know, people who like her, like her no matter what she does, even when she's seems, you know, in outer space on promos and not there's still stuff that she did over the last year on TV that people were like, yay, Sasha. And I'm like, did you watch? Like, is she even on this planet? Like, what was going on with her? And I don't even know what to make of her sometimes. And then other times it's like, oh, there's a star. And so whatever is going on with her, does Levesque's leadership and relationship with her lead to the best version of Sasha? And if so, make her a babyface and build around her if Levesque feels like manageable. You know, I don't know his perspective on Sasha walking out because she disagreed with the Booker's orders on what the match was going to be and what the outcome was going to be and when it would take place. And that's the job of the Booker and the job of the wrestler to do it. And Levesque is in a management position. He's not sitting here going, oh yeah, sometimes you got to take, you know, the CM Punk side. Oh, you got to stand up to at some point. And, you know, I doubt Levesque is on Sasha's side on this, but he also has dealt with Vince McMahon and I think has been frustrated at times with Vince. And so I think he can bond with Sasha over that. But while bonding with her, also go, if I bring you back and push you, you have to understand you might not agree with my booking decisions. And there might be factors that aren't your business that lead to me making a decision you really strongly disagree with. But I need to know you'll do what I ask of you because you work for me. And that's how this works. And if he has a good talk with her and she goes, well, I trust you, you know, but Vince broke down my trust. And I felt I was lied to. And Hunter can say, well, I'll never lie to you. But I'm telling you now, plans might change, but I'll give you the respect of explaining. You know, I mean, I just think they can work it out. But if it turns out Sasha's, like, not amenable to that or seems like, no, I'm in charge of my career and I got a proof of everything, people are going to be disappointed because Levesque's going to be like, we're not bringing you back. So, anyway, I don't want to get too far down the Sasha road. Mike, thank you for the call. Some good topics there.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Yep, enjoy the pay-per-view.
Yep, you bet. All right, we'll go next to William in San Diego. William, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, sorry about that. I was thinking about the, there's kind of an announcement they made yesterday or a couple days ago about the Riddle-Rollins match being taken off the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about that? Do you think it's a big... you know, something that they'll be missing? Do you think the card is fine as is? Because, I think Rollins and Riddle are two of their biggest workhorses, biggest talents in the ring. So I was kind of looking forward to that one. So I don't know, I'm a little disappointed about them taking it off.
Yeah, Alex, how do you feel about that?
I've made no bones about those are two of my favorite guys in the company. So I was really excited about it. With that said, though, I am happy that they're postponing it until there's an actual story behind it instead of it being like an indie like dream match on SummerSlam instead. You know, it seems like they're actually trying to build to a story and give it something behind it. Maybe they'll do it at that show in Cardiff in September. But I also think this might be part of a storyline in order to have an avenue to bring somebody back. I really don't want to jump on all the internet rumors and speculate, but I do think that is possible because I don't think Seth is going to be off the card. I think he'll wrestle. I don't know if you guys saw this, but he has like a weird streak going. Like he's like the only person in the company who's been on every SummerSlam for like the last 8 or 9 years or something. Like
yeah,
it's something
yeah.
crazy like that. And you would think that they'll add something to that. I don't know what it is. I mean, honestly, if we're just going to throw him against somebody, I wouldn't mind him watching him wrestle AJ just so we get a good 20 minutes out of it.
William, back to you.
Yeah, what do you guys make of Max Dupree being back? Not only, you know, him being back, but also being back like in the same angle, like because there were a lot of stories over the week about him, you know, being taken off because he had some attitude problems or whatever, or that Vince blamed him for tanking one of the Maximum Male Model segments or whatever. So. Do you guys read anything into him being back? Is like a vote of confidence from Hunter or something?
Yeah, I touched on that at the top of the show. I was the first to report on that actually last late Friday night, Saturday morning. And Fightful came in with Rich Sean Rossap, came in with a report, added some details to it. It was an issue of Dupree. I mean, my understanding was Vince McMahon didn't like Dupree's attitude. He was talking back to him or frustrating him with, quote, suggestions that felt like it wasn't his place and who are you? And, I don't want to extrapolate too much from what I've heard, but it just came across as it was very much a McMahon thing of I don't like this guy. Let's just get some, you know, woman in there to do it instead. Or they were going to do the gimmick with the brother-sister, and that made Max expendable in Vince's eyes. And I'm not actually sure which came first on that one. But he is back, and it's just, to me, it's apparent that Paul Levesque likes him and thinks the issue with Vince wasn't disqualifying. Keep in mind, Triple H's job for the Hall of Fame was to go make amends with people who had huge fallings out with Vince McMahon. He is trained in that. He didn't just run NXT. He wasn't just a main event wrestler. He was the Hall of Fame go mend broken fence guy. And so, you know, Ultimate Warrior, Bruno Sammartino, there were others. That's just sort of something he's done. So, you know, the same thing that happened with Sasha, you can just go to Max and go, can we make this work. Tell me what happened. What's your side? And it is his call to bring him back. It's not Vince McMahon's call. So, and Hunter knows Max better than Vince did. And so I'm happy about it. I think Dupree, I've liked him in every role he's had. And I think he'll, the act was, I agree with Nick and Tom and Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure last Saturday. I just think the whole Maximum L model thing was dead if Max Dupree wasn't part of it. And I mean, it's, I guess that's pulling the plug pretty quickly after Maxine's first appearance. But I mean, I just think he's needed. He's such a good spokesperson. So I was glad to see him back. And I don't think Maximum L models I think some people, you know, obviously want to see it go, and I don't think it's guaranteed to work, but I did want to see it play out a little more. But if it was a Vince McMahon pet idea and they just pulled the plug on it completely, I wouldn't have been shocked by that either. Alex, how about your thoughts?
Well, when I saw Dupree was gone, I kind of thought, and I read your report, actually, Saturday morning, and then listened to Nick and Tom's also. And the best thing from Nick on that show was how he talked about Dupree makes it work because he looks like a retired model. I'd never thought of that. And
yes,
that was
a great point.
Yeah, that was just spot on. So if Nick's listening, that was good stuff, Barbatti. I liked that. Anyway, I kind of...
That's a VIP exclusive podcast, by the way, and another reason to go VIP. It drops just about every Saturday afternoon and is definitely a cool part of VIP membership. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, I kind of agree with you too, Wade, that when I saw that Dupree was gone, I kind of thought this thing might be dead in the water. Not to say that the young woman playing Maxine is going to be terrible or anything. There's no way for us to know that. She said like 20 words on television. But we'll see. But I think he's the one that makes that gimmick work. I'm interested to see if they add anybody else, and I really want to see them wrestle in that gimmick. I know we've seen both guys wrestle before. I'm not an idiot. I know that. But I want to see how they wrestle in the gimmick and if they actually wrestle in the gimmick, if that makes sense, as opposed to just wrestling in the clothes, because it's not the same thing. Yep. On top of all that, there's one huge disappointment that I have with that segment tonight, and I had it in the back of my head that they were going to start doing this, and it worried me, and they did it tonight. If they're now going to wear and advertise WWE merchandise, this thing is dead and needs to be stopped. That is not what the intention of this should be.
Yeah. Yeah, because it ceases to become this aggravating, annoying group that's infiltrated WWE and it gets heel heat, and it now seems like it's this way to annoy you, but in a co-opted way to try to get you to buy merch.
Yep, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
All right, William, what else for us?
One last topic before I let you guys go, and this might maybe kind of null because I know you guys already talked a bunch about Ronda and Liv. And if I remember correctly, you made the prediction that you think Ronda is trading heel at SummerSlam. But I don't know. Have you guys, like, do you think the Hunter Ronda relationship plays anything into that? Because I feel like when Ronda first came into WWE, she was kind of like a, I don't know if project is the right word for someone who, you know, was a very accomplished UFC fighter in her own right, but her transition from UFC to WWE did seem to be very much Triple H kind of project, something that he was very involved in. So, and I got the sense from tonight, I feel like Liv was actually, like, the way she was refusing to tag Ronda, she seemed, she was like very ready to like prove herself in kind of a way that just seemed like a turnoff, you know, for from a character perspective. And I feel like they played to Ronda's strengths more tonight, which is, you know, she didn't say much. She just came out kicking ass, being violent and, you know, not caring much about offending anyone or whatever. So I don't know. Does that play into your guys' prediction that the Hunter, the fact that Hunter now is the head of creative?
Yeah, Alex, it was interesting talking to our on-site correspondent, Rob, earlier, because if you're in the building and you're seeing Liv Morgan wrestle that way, it's a completely different – you might have a completely different impression, and you certainly have a different framework than Cole framing it the way that he did. You know, she's showing hard. She has something to prove, but is it really wise? And McAfee kind of backing him up on that. And so there's clearly the story isn't complete without the commentator steering you in a direction and framing it a certain way. But even with that framing, you know, Cole was making a compelling case. This wasn't a wise decision, even if it's admirable. But I don't think they're up to anything other than that. I mean, I just do think they thought it's logical to be skeptical. This is the right strategy, but Liv's character is more heart than brains, or more to prove. She wants to prove herself regardless of the context of the moment, and she's not strategizing the way that maybe she should, but it's because of a positive trait that she has, but it might be her undoing. And I think that's a story they want to tell. I don't think it's, you're meant to think she's a dope, as Jason Paul wrote in his report. He's saying she comes across that way. I don't think that's their intent.
It's not their intent, but Jason's right. That unfortunately the way the inflection and the words that Cole used can give that impression. That's why I said earlier they need to be careful with that, because this story can work, but it's very important how you frame it. Again, that's why I use the Steve Austin argument, because, you know, the whole thing with the double turn with him and Brett at WrestleMania 13, if a commentator makes a couple stupid comments in there, that's framed entirely differently, and Austin looks like an idiot instead of a valiant hero. So you have to be really careful with how you frame that kind of stuff. This is obviously nowhere near that level, but there is some similar context in that at this point, they're portraying Liv as desperate to prove herself as opposed to, like you said, being a strategist. You know, she doesn't have the experience of being a champion, and they're leaning into that, which is fine. But they have to find the right balance between the two. But no, that's not their intent. As far as what you brought up about being in the stands, that's interesting, and I didn't really think about that. But it would also depend on where you were sitting, right? Because if you're sitting behind, if you're sitting behind them, it kind of comes across like Liv is just being kind of a bitch, right? Like, she won't tag her in. Like, depending on where you're sitting and what angle you have. So that could be a negative in the arena too. But I think part of the original question was, are they going to turn Liv heel? I don't think so. I don't think there's a grand master plan there.
Yeah. Yeah. William, any quick closing words from you?
I said that was my last question, but I actually remember something real quick. They did like a little thing where, after Kayla interviewed, Theory Heyman came in and they kind of like talk, kind of mumbling over, while the commentary was talking over them, so we didn't really hear what they were talking about. I know you predicted that the Usos would play a role into maybe stopping Theory from cashing in, but I don't know, did that little interaction between Heyman and Theory stand out to you? I don't know, like, if I would predict that Heyman would turn on Roman and have Theory as his new client or something, but it's just kind of awkward nowadays with Roman being out for, like, I don't know, 3 out of 4 weeks a month, and Paul Heyman being there all on his own, kind of being the representative for Roman and kind of having to build all these feuds on his own. It just feels kind of awkward. So I feel like Paul would need someone like, not necessarily Theory, but someone like Theory there to play off of, to be his client. So maybe that would play into that decision if they wanted to go that way. So I don't know. Did you make anything of that little interaction?
Yeah, so I took it as Heyman trying to manipulate Theory because Theory has power that Heyman doesn't like him having right now, which is disrupting the potential to disrupt Roman Reigns' march to 700 days and beyond. And that theory might be easily manipulated, but also too flighty to really even understand manipulations of Heyman, and or too undisciplined or unfocused. Like, and they haven't totally told that story overtly, but I think it's sort of implied in their characters. Heyman's going to try to manipulate Theory, and Theory's going to be too much of a dope to even fully comprehend what Heyman's offering, and he's just focused on cashing in if he can, regardless of what Heyman tries to tempt him with or offer him with. But then he did come out later and you know, late in the show in a way that it could be seen as the intent to serve Heyman. Heyman's not going to manage – well, I shouldn't say he's not going. I don't think Heyman's going to manage Theory. If Paul Levesque thinks we need Heyman on TV every week, standing next to a wrestler who's going to be more full-time, is there a way to make this work with Theory? If Heyman's enough of a fan of Theory and wants to work with them, I mean, I can't rule that out. But Theory doesn't seem like the type of wrestler that Heyman would respect, nor does Theory seem like he's at a point where Heyman would think he could turn him into this, you know, monster beast dominating guy. So I just don't think it's a good fit, and I don't think they would see it as such, and I don't think they expect us to see it as such. What do you think, Alex?
No, I don't think the intention is to ever pair Heyman and Theory. I honestly think that segment tonight is more cut and dry. I think Heyman had intel that Brock was in the building and manipulated Theory into saying, hey, listen, I have a segment later. I think Brock is going to show up, or I have intel Brock is going to show up. This might be a good opportunity for you to get some payback for what he did to you on Monday. Really, really, really think that was the intent, and I really think it's that simple. I hate to, you know,
no, that's,
dash
that's,
other thoughts, but I think that that's what we're supposed to think.
And it totally makes sense. WWE did not explicitly state it, but they might think it's obvious. It's obvious that that is what happened. And there's nothing more to it. And you know, the only thing missing is Heyman was very surprised, it seemed like, when Lesnar came out. And if he got tipped off, would he have been that surprised and antagonized Lesnar the way he did? But if he thought he had Theory as his backup, maybe that, you know, that would be enough to explain it.
Yep.
Yeah. Good. All right. William, thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Have a good one.
Absolutely. You too. All right, let's jump over to Ryan in Cumberland, and we got Javier on deck, too, for a little roundtable to close things out. Ryan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
What do you think the odds are of Drew McIntyre winning the title at Clash of the Castle, since Davey Boy Smith did something very similar when they did the UK pay-per-view? So do you think they'll do something similar, the big victory?
Alex, I'll throw to you on that one. What's Drew's future?
A percentage chance on him winning the title.
One or both.
If I'm glad you said that. If they keep them together, less than 10%.
Yeah.
If they separate them somehow, 50-50. I was a huge fan of that character, and I just feel like everything since The Miz cashed in has just been a downward spiral that he has just not recovered from, most of which has not been his fault. But again, I don't think it's the sword. I don't think it was the Survivor Series match with Reigns. I don't think it was any of that. I think when The Miz cashed in, and I think that just killed all of the booking around McIntyre, because at that time McIntyre was beating everybody and thwarting all challengers. He would have been a guy at the time who could have gone through Elimination Chamber and then fended off The Miz pretty easily. So for that not to go the way it did, it just killed him, and he just hasn't recovered. But I don't know what his future is. I think he's heavily factored in a two title situation. In a one title situation, he's a one or two off challenger, unfortunately. It's just kind of where we're at.
Ryan, what next?
My second question is on Jeff Jarrett and the special guest referee. And then when I went to these Impact house shows long time ago that Jeff Jarrett did this gimmick of being the referee, and they did quite well because I knew people that drove like 4 or 5 hours just to go to see Jeff Jarrett as the special guest referee. So do you think WWE will try to do this on the house show circuit like Impact did about 12 years ago with Jeff Jarrett?
Alex, what do you think?
If they come here again, Jeff Jarrett might entice me to go more than what we got last time.
Yeah. I mean, I hope they just tell a better story. And I think Jarrett as a local attraction to add a little something extra, or a national, international attraction to add something extra is fine. Just tell a better story. Give him more to work with. You know, he was struggling out there on the mic. I don't think he had much to work with. And I think it came across in his delivery. He didn't have a – I mean, he's a little rusty being on, you know, national television doing this, but he's also really experienced and has done this since he was a teenager. But I don't think he looked super comfortable out there because I don't think he had a lot to work with. And he doesn't have a backstory or chemistry with the two teams either. So whatever you do with him, just do a better job with him. Put him in a position to win. What else, Ryan?
And my final question is on this Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns match. Do you have a favorite match the two have that was like a basic singles match between the two that wasn't like a triple threat match or any like fatal four-way match? Mine personally was that WrestleMania match where Brock beat Roman and everyone thought that Roman was going to win the title, but that's not what happened.
Alex, that is it's just not my specialty, like ranking, like – having a memory to like sit there and I don't like ponder that kind of thing as much as I think some fans do, just based on my wrestling schedule and pumping out coverage of what's happening today. So I don't even have anything that comes to mind in terms of ranking them, but do you?
Can I pick this one because it's the last one?
Sure. I mean, yeah.
No, I guess if I have to pick one, I would go with, honestly, the most recent one, just because I liked the build to it. I thought it felt big. So that for that reason and that reason alone, I'll pick that one.
All right, cool. Ryan, appreciate it. Good hearing from you.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Of course, of course. Javier Machado, PW Torch, VIP contributor, doing New Japan Pride podcast, covering New Japan G1. Javier, welcome to the roundtable portion of the show.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Alex. How's it going?
Good. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind? What do you think of our conversation? What's on your agenda?
Well, Alex, you mentioned you had a question about the match length time. So I went ahead and researched it because I can't help myself. You guys got to stop doing that on these things.
It is cruel.
In general, what's happened since the last couple pay-per-views is the Friday SmackDown has almost been treated more like a pre-show than an actual go-home show. And you've been getting a lot of matches that look like would have ended up being on the pay-per-view itself. I think it was mentioned that that Sheamus, I thought that Sheamus and McIntyre was going to be for the pay-per-view. So those tend to have a little bit more wrestling. They end because the average is between 30 and 36 minutes of wrestling per show. There was an anomaly on 6/10, which was 44 minutes, but today was 46 minutes. So definitely a high, much higher than the average one, with the exception of that one anomaly. Another anomaly was also on the 8th, which was 15 minutes of wrestling.
It does all average out then, doesn't it?
This one definitely felt a little bit longer, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Thanks for those stats. Yeah, it wasn't just a feeling we had. This was legitimately a significant percentage higher than normal.
Yeah. I mean, if I were a fact checking site, I'd say mostly true. Because the ones before pay per views are slightly longer. But yeah, the first thought I had when the show started was, is the old timey Donnybrook the same match as the Cracker Barrel Clash without the actual branding?
I don't know, but I'm glad that was your first thought.
For people who don't know what I'm talking about, it's that was a match that they had in early AEW that was branded Cracker Barrel, and had the they had like the barrels instead of the, you know, like they had the kegs in this
one.
So.
The keg. Yeah. What? Who's in that match? By the way, refresh my memory on that.
I just looked it up like a second ago because I couldn't remember the name of it. It was Jimmy Havoc, Darby Allin, and Joey Janela.
Wow. AEW's in a different place than back then. That's crazy. I want to go back and watch three random episodes from AEW's first 3 months and just like look at how different they are right now, because there's some differences. There's some similarities for sure, but
the who's the caller before Ryan?
I can't remember now.
Because they stole a point I was going to make. I think there's a good – I mean, I would not discount Austin Theory cashing in successfully and Heyman teaming up with him.
Interesting. Okay.
In the promo. Yeah. In the promo that the Heyman cut, he goes off – when he goes off and talks about the length of the run – he says, and guess who's going to be spoiler tomorrow night? Brock Lesnar over my dead body. And then he goes to talk about what Reigns is going to do to Lesnar. And he says he's going to raise his he's going to, you know, raise the belt and be done with Lesnar once and for all. And he's going to say something else. And then that's when he gets interrupted. But the fact that he said, guess who's going to be spoiler tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar over my dead body does not discount that that the one that's going to spoil the, you know, the continuation of the run to be Austin Theory.
Alex, what say you? Is your jaw dropped or are you going, no, come on, reading too much into it?
I really hope not. I really, really, really hope not. I mean, it's better than Lesnar, I guess, but I sincerely hope not. I just want to know how they're going to handle it if he cashes in during the match, because how are they going to explain a triple threat last man standing? How did the rules for that work?
Yeah, really. You have to call the lawyer to ringside to shuffle through some paperwork and issue a ruling right on the spot. But maybe that is, again, who knows what convoluted way they're going to try to split the belt. Maybe they've got some idea to do it under those circumstances.
For Javier's point, I buy that if that's the way that they're going to split these things up. That's the only way I buy it, is that if this Money in the Bank is the key to doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because and granted, this is Wikipedia, but the way they describe Money in the Bank is that you get the title for, you know, you get the shot at a title of your choice. But it's assumed that it's going to be for the unified title, that's one title. But they could just say that the contract is for the title of your choice.
Right.
So he can take the WWE title from Reigns, and then, because that's the one that Cody wants, and then when Cody comes back, he could feud with Theory for it. While I'm expecting McIntyre to win the Universal at the Clash at the Castle. Is that the name of it? I keep forgetting the name of it. I keep wanting to say Castle Attack and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yep.
It's not my first choice. I think just the straight up Reigns victory would be the more likely. Theory gets too beat up. The thing is that it's because what's most interesting to me is that it's going to be a referendum on Theory. And the thing is that for a lot of, you know, we talked a little bit earlier that people have been saying, you know, from what I've seen in social media and stuff, they've been saying, you know, oh, you know, there goes Theory's push, there goes you know, certain things they're expecting happening, right? The thing is that Theory was actually recruited by Hunter, and Hunter sent Steven Regal to Evolve And basically, Regal cut a promo or mentioned that the future of wrestling is Darby Allin and is one of these two men, Darby Allin, Austin Theory. NXT sent talent to Evolve to wrestle those two wrestlers to bring them along to test them. Theory wrestled Roderick Strong, Johnny Gargano, Kyle O'Reilly, and Adam Cole, while Allin wrestled Roderick Strong, Cassius Ohno, Mustafa Ali, and Velveteen Dream. So these are people that NXT was putting, resources into to bring, yeah. To help them develop. So now what happened with Theory is if that Theory was called up from NXT during the whole debacle with the eye stuff that was going on and then ended up going back to NXT. And, you know, at that point you had to basically rehabilitate him from the damage that had been done to him. Now, what's going to be interesting about tomorrow is going to be in what, how he ends up. Cause he could end up winning the US title, in which case mid card, they could go and give him one of the titles. Or he could just fail to cash in and be an embarrassment. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle him. Thing is that he's been important. He was, people were, there was the scuttlebutt online was, oh, look at all the, theories, being beat up on Monday Night Raw. And I'm like, yeah, but he was also in a third of the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see whether they either continue the gas as they have, and I'll listen, I could understand some people think, they're pushing him down our throats because, he's, like I said, on a third of the show wrestling, he's competing without, the entire roster. So I could understand people being frustrated over that, but I don't think it's like, again, we'll see tomorrow, but I don't think it's like they're not going to push him, almost I could see because, while he still has an upside, it's, that's a different story, but I do, it'll be interesting. I'll just leave it at that.
And who did you just reference?
Almost.
Omos.
Is that Omos or whatever. I don't care.
Omos. Yeah, I picked my spot. For weeks you've been calling him like almost or something, and it's like Omos. So I just thought I'd pick on your.
All right, Konosuke Takeshita.
I know. Well, that's the thing. I'm a glass house here, so I do so aware of that.
That's okay. I also got a little something for you for the end of the call.
Very good. Yeah. Well, let me, Alex. What do you think about all of that? And do you think Javier should next solve the missing Secret Service texts mystery too?
Well, we can only hope. And then afterwards, he can split the atom. no, seriously. I have two questions coming off the back of that, and the first one is. I'm going to ask them and then I'll throw it to Javier, but
yeah,
the first question is I kind of disagree because why can't Austin Theory just not cash in? Like, why is that not a viable option? Because I think that's what's going to happen. I think he's just not going to cash in for one reason or another, whether it's Wade's theory of the Usos take him out or, maybe, the way that the last man standing thing ends is that both guys are laid out, but one of them gets up at 9 and one of them gets up at 10. So at the end of it, they're both standing up and Theory doesn't have an opportunity.
Like, or he walks out and then looks at them and turns around and goes, not my time. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Like, I think that's a very strong possibility that that's the end of the show tomorrow. And so I want to throw that out as a question is why do you not think that's an option? And then the second thing is I just want to be clear here that you think that come the end of Labor Day weekend, Roman Reigns will have zero titles. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Not necessarily zero because I did mention that I'm not thinking that it's the most likely scenario that Theory wins the title. Cashes in and wins one or both the titles. I'm just saying that the possibility's out there that they, and if it does happen, these are the breadcrumbs that you can follow to see, as opposed to, you know, if it does happen, you then in retrospect say, oh, well, these are the breadcrumbs, you know. So I'm just, you know, so I like I said, I do think it's most likely Roman Reigns comes out and they do find a way for him to, I mean, there needs to either be an attempt or an excuse. So like him not showing up, because they promoted it so hard, there, it has to be resolved. The cashing in situation has to be resolved in some way, shape, or form. Maybe Lashley just kills him and he's not able to, or, you know, there for, or for whatever other reason. But I'm just saying that there is this possibility. So, you know, people are not surprised that, you know, that, oh, this came out of nowhere, that, you know,
right,
this is a, you know, this is another chance. I'm playing devil's advocate in that scenario. I'm just saying that's not an impossibility. What was the other, you had another question?
It was with Reigns, because if you think somehow they get the WWE title off of him and then they get the Universal title off of him, do you think he's not going to have either belt after the Clash thing? And, or do you think that there's a possibility, you know, let's say Theory doesn't cash in or whatever, if, do you really think if McIntyre won it, because you said he'd win the Universal title, do you think if they split them, that's the one they take off Reigns, when that's the one he has the number of days with?
Well, in that scenario, that you know, in the scenario, if Theory's involved, that's what I was thinking. I think that, I mean, I'm not as confident as I was a while ago with Drew McIntyre, because you know, I agree that Drew McIntyre was hurt. I disagree when it happened. I don't think it was The Miz. Drew McIntyre, when he had the title, he was invincible, and the first chink in that armor when you first started hearing people, you know, grumbling was when he lost the title to Orton and then regained it. The Miz thing was more means to an end to get him the win at WrestleMania. What killed Drew McIntyre, and I was really vocal on this, but I wrote it in the primer that I actually wrote in the primer that it'd be booking malfeasance if he didn't win the title from Lashley at WrestleMania in front of a crowd, and then he lost that match. And that was, from that point on, it was like that was the beginning of the downswing. And in interviews, he's mentioned, because that WrestleMania was delayed because of a rain. And he remembered he had cut
there.
His really weird promo. And he said that the reason that he cut the promo was really weird is because he was in a daze when he found out that he wasn't winning the title. So I don't think that not only did that kill his momentum among the fans, I think it also killed part of his desire of being like the top guy, knowing that he had something special going. And then that loss kind of like, well, he's still going to be a top guy. I think that's when he's like, well, this was my chance to be the top guy. And I think that was, you know, that decision of having him lose to Lashley was what not only hurt him in the eyes of the fans, I think it also hurt his confidence too.
Interesting. Yeah. Anyway, good stuff there.
Yeah, and that's where my thought of him having to win at Cardiff is, because, you know, it's you know, it's what people have mentioned about you know, like Davey Boy Smith winning the European title, that kind of feel. Originally, I thought that there would be some way where that Reigns would say, okay, fine, you could challenge me, but only for one of the titles. And then he would lose that title, or, you know, so that was my original thought. So if Theory does get one of the titles, I can see him end up having no titles after the Clash. Otherwise, I mean, again, Drew has to win one of the titles, because now he's in this situation where maybe you could salvage something at Clash. You know, I don't think it'll be as big as it could have been, but it's like your second as winning at that WrestleMania. But, you know, it'd be your second best choice, and then, you know, so I'm expecting him to win at least one of the titles at Clash.
Alex, any thoughts on what Javier's said?
No, the WrestleMania thing I agree with, and I should clarify. There was a chink in the armor when he lost it to Orton, but I thought he got it back when he had that awesome entrance and then won the title back. But to me, again, you're right. If he had beat Lashley at Mania, and I was there for that, that was in Tampa.
Yeah.
And, I agree with you. I remember being, very deflated because I made the assumption that he was going
to
win.
I was about to ask you that because watching the show, I felt the crowd be deflated at that moment because you were the first crowd, right? The first live crowd?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So for you to open with that match, I mean, I'm serious, to this day, because when stuff doesn't make logical sense to me in any way, I always try to find logical sense in stuff. So even if it's like illogical, I try to think, this person made this illogical decision because to them it was logical. I don't understand
right.
how you make that decision that coming back. I mean, that was I think that was like one of the dumbest decisions, one of the wrestling's dumbest decisions ever. I mean, you could tell I'm upset about it still. It's been how long?
and I remember thinking at the time it was more an attempt to build Lashley than a no confidence vote for Drew.
Yeah.
But when you start, if you're Vince McMahon and you're focusing more on building up Lashley for Lesnar, it is inherently a no confidence vote in Drew because that gives away he is not your priority at that moment.
Yeah. If they had gone that route, that would have made at least some sense, but it looks like that the logical thing that they were going for was to get more heat on Lashley. And that was that was what was ridiculous. I mean, sometimes that happens in wrestling where you try to get too much heat on someone and then you're like, I think you can make that argument. Maybe that happened with the NWO.
Yeah.
But I think that was the I would tell you I'm still upset over that. It's just
yeah.
It would have been a different world.
Well,
To
Wade's point, at the time when that happened, I was like, okay, well, they're really going with Lashley. Let's see what happens. Like, this isn't what I wanted. It kind of sucks, but I'll give it a chance. And here we are, a year and a half after the fact. And let's be honest, like Lashley's title run was cool and everything, but there wasn't a big payoff to it.
Yeah.
Like he didn't have a big match against Lesnar or Reigns or like there was no payoff to the whole thing.
Well, the Biggie injury kind of threw things off too, right?
To an extent, but at the same time, like even before the Big E injury, they had taken the title off him and turned him back into the New Day guy.
Yeah.
So the thing is like there was no big marquee money match that in hindsight justifies the push of Lashley in that WrestleMania situation that Javier brought up. That's the bigger problem as we sit here now is like, what did they get out of that decision in hindsight?
Yeah. All right, Javier, I'll throw it back to you. We're running along tonight, and I feel like we could deep dive this even longer. But you and Alex can do a special like podcast and just like deep dive on this stuff. I'm sitting back listening. This is fun.
Let me see if I have anything else that's I do have to say that I think two of my favorite moments were with Rousey, which was when the women were bickering backstage, she just rolled her eyes and walked away. And I thought that was like the biggest babyface move she's ever done.
I popped for that.
Which is why when she came into the ring all pissed off and then that one person was just yelling at her and he's like, no, you shut up. Your mom failed you. I thought that was great because she was already in a mood. So I was like, yeah, that worked for me, that it was more of a, this is an unruly fan. Not that she was turning on all the fans, but there was one unruly fan and she told him off. I actually, just in the moment, I liked it.
If your instinct is to throw the mom under the bus, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I get why you pop for it and I get it's just a thing to say, but her instinct is like, not blame the fan, but like blame the mom for how they raised the fan. I don't know. Leave mom's out of it.
The last thing I had, this is a little bit more of an slightly more of an AEW thing, but wait, if you don't mind telling me, what year were you born?
Who are you talking to?
Wade, what year were you born?
1971.
All right. Morris, 75, 4.8. Milica, 79.1. Evergreen, 79, 3.1. Rush City, 79.1. Nisswa, 79.1. Cottage Grove, 81, 3.6. Walker, 82.2. Dumont, 93, 4.1. Granite Falls, 94, 3.1, and Brandon, 2011, 3.12. Those are all earthquakes that have happened in Minnesota since you were born.
And nobody knew they happened who lived in those towns because they didn't register on surface level. And nothing – there wasn't even
the, no,
someone –
No, the 4.– the 175, the 175 did. There's the – they're farmers who talked about it. And as far as lakes,
I have it on good authority that was just a tractor driving by, and they
as far as lakes, you're calling it Twister by the River, I think.
Yes, that's, I'm settled
lake
on that.
Is almost equidistant. Loading Lake is almost equidistant from the stadium, and because of the fact there are 14,000.
What did you call it?
Loring?
No, Loring.
L-O-R-N-I-N-G?
Loring. There's no N.
Yeah.
Loring.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to spell that.
And
because of the factor four. Good.
Oh, no. Yeah, Loring Park and Loring Lake is – people call it Loring Park because it's barely big enough to be a lake. And it's nobody in Minnesota calls it the lake because we have like 10,000 of them. So you're not going to win this one, obviously. Not with any Minnesotan. No one says I'm.
There's 14.
Oh, go ahead, Javier. Sorry.
No, considering the fact of 14,380 lakes, I might have missed one. That might be nearby.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, there is no the lake in Minneapolis. There's the chain of lakes. There's Lake Superior, which is on the like hours north. It's just. Come on, Chris Harrington, speak up. Twister by the River.
I
want that
next
year.
Researching this.
You sure did.
That's a lot of time I'm going to spend doing something else. All right.
Hey, but before I go, Javier, I mean, before I hang up on you, Sean emailed and said, just wanted to send a quick email to elaborate on Drew, was that he also lost at WrestleMania by a dumb MVP distraction that didn't help either. He actually never elaborated about the Usos Street Profits. Do you think this might be where the Street Profits break up? Because I feel that's very possible. Anyway, thanks for all you guys do with the torch. So I do want to throw out there we left something unanswered that he brought up, and if the MVP thing is worthy of either of you commenting on, because we did spend time on that. So Javier, you first.
I called in after that, I did bring it up that it was not just bad for everything, is that he in his previous promo had talked about how he was not, you know, because he had lost a match against Lashley by distraction. He said, I'm not going to be distracted. That led into, I think there was a cage match or something. And he said that he had lost because he had lost that WrestleMania match because of a distraction. He's not going to be distracted, and he was distracted again. And I remember that. I remember that being like another issue I had. He made a promise he was going to I may have him back. You know, the timeline backwards, but he had promised that he was never going to be distracted again, and then he ended up getting distracted.
Alex, anything you want to add about that?
Just as somebody who was there, nobody in the stands had any idea that he was distracted at WrestleMania. Just to throw that out there.
Interesting.
We had no clue.
Yeah, because it was he was supposed to grab his leg. MVP was supposed to grab his leg, but he was out of position, so he just yelled at him, and then he, you know, he's like, and so that was even worse. He like stopped and looked because he yelled at him because he missed grabbing his leg.
Yeah.
I only knew there was a distraction because I think Wade told me. Honestly and truly, I think Wade told me. Yeah.
As far as the Street Profits goes, that could have been a Vince idea that Levesque's going to abandon. I haven't seen or heard hints that make me think that's still on the table, but that can also be lulling us into not thinking about it. So it's more of a surprise when it happens. Alex, do you remember any hints the last couple of weeks or indications that they're still going that direction?
I don't know if this is wishful thinking or not. I do not think they will be a team come 2023. I don't know if that'll happen in the draft or if they break up. I do not think it'll be tomorrow, just to throw that out there. And I also think that there is a small chance that they win tomorrow.
All right.
Like if you're asking for an upset tomorrow, that would be my pick.
Javier, how about you?
With Jeff Jarrett getting super kicked by the Usos today, Jeff Jarrett's going to help the Usos win.
Yeah.
Javier, just to be clear, you are 100% predicting that come next week, Paul Heyman's managing Theory and Jeff Jarrett's managing the Usos.
Yep, that's my prediction, 100%.
I'm going to write that up.
Triple H, you never know.
Yeah.
Oh, I did want to bring up, what would make SummerSlam for me would be if Ric Flair jumps to the railing and attacks Jeff Jarrett to promote the match.
Oh, God. I don't even give them ideas.
I mean, there had been reports that Triple H said that, you know, he wanted to make something of a splash. He won't do anything stupid, but, you know, this could be a splash.
Before you go, Javier, we got another email here. This is someone says they didn't sign their email. Initials are SM. I'm watching SmackDown here in Ireland, and they appear to have several Irish flags the wrong way around in the Sheamus Drew match. The Irish flag, green, white, and orange. They have it orange, white, and green, which is actually the flag of the Ivory Coast. At least they tried, I suppose. Is that worse than Quake by the Lake, Javier?
Probably if you're in Ireland, yeah. well, I mean the worst one. I forgot who it was when Shinzo Abe was assassinated. One of the news stations actually was showing the Korean flag.
Oh God!
Wow. It's the Japanese flag. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah.
You just hope there's enough people in the newsroom, you know, who are like, wait, no, take that down. But nope. They needed to watch more Big Bang Theory and you know, Shelton with his flag YouTube show.
Oh, it's Japan, man. Maybe it's me because I'm a big Japan, you know, fan, but it's white with a big red sun in the middle. It's you know, I mean, maybe it's just me, but you know, who knows?
No, it's not just you. I'm just
You know, I think that's one of the more – I mean, I can understand if you get the Cuban and Puerto Rican flags confused because they're, you know, almost the same except reverse – you know, the colors are reversed on them. But, you know, I mean, sometimes I have to think about, you know – I have to think about it sometimes. So,
yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, and I do talk about the possibility of Dawkins and Ford breaking up in the primer. So I just need to finish – give me a second proofread, and then also Wade, you'll have, and you guys put it up. So,
excellent, cool, Javier. Thanks, appreciate it. Always great having you on.
No. Right. Have a good night, guys.
Yep, you too.
See you later, Javier.
Alex, anything else you want to say before we wrap up the show here?
No.
I didn't think we'd do like almost 2.5 hours on that episode, but we did. There's a lot more to talk about than I thought, but it's good conversation, good calls, good emails. So thank you.
Yeah, no complaints at all.
Tell people about your podcast, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Myself and Patrick Moynihan host the 90s Passcast every week here.
That's the Bill Watts reference earlier.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I didn't even mean to do that, but it's like in the lexicon now, I guess.
Yeah.
But We're on the Daily Cast every weekend. I don't know if our show will come out today or tomorrow. I probably should have checked that before we did this tonight, huh? Anyway, but we take a look back 30 years ago at Pro Wrestling Torch from that week. Lately, I've been doing a WWF Superstars report from the time period. Right now, our podcast is like really taking a WCW turn just because the two of us have gotten so big into it, and there's so much going on with Bill Watts and Wade Keller's hatred of Dusty Rhodes in the early 90s, of course. I'm kidding. But no, it's a very fun show. There's a lot of dry humor in it,
yeah.
It's kind of thing. And it's a fun time, and it's a good look back. And actually, while we're talking about it, now that it is July 30th, I have officially been with the Torch for 1 year today.
Wow. Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't think you'd last that long.
Thanks. I don't know how to take that.
I'm totally kidding. And that can be taken many ways. But just obviously just a random quip. By the way, the podcast did post. It is up. It is available. So everybody search PW Torch on your podcast app if you have not subscribed to the free PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. And you guys discussed SummerSlam 92. Vince McMahon was in the news, believe it or not, 30 years ago. He's in the news. Such a fun show and very, very different than any show we've done. And it's great seeing those back issues come back to life with a fresh set of eyes and the technology of a podcast to break them down and react to them.
No, I appreciate it. We've been having a lot of fun. And what's funny about you saying Vince is like, we didn't even do it intentionally when we recorded last night, but he came up organically in different things we were talking about, like more than he ever had. It was like the strangest coincidence in the world.
Yep. All right, very cool. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, listeners. Thanks to our on-site correspondent. Thanks to callers. Thanks to the emailers. We'll sign off there and talk to you all next time.